financial markets in turmoil.
What are the root causes of the financial crisis?
The dollar losing value.
Heading for its biggest loss in nearly three decades.
Will Social Security even be there?
I don't know.
Buy or rent?
That's a very good question.
Interest rates?
I'm not so sure.
Where do you put your money?
I don't know.
Welcome to the show that answers your questions. This is Follow the Money Weekly with your host, economist and best-selling author.
Here's Jerry Robinson.
All right, friends, welcome to you all around the world. Welcome to Follow the Money Radio. So grateful to have you here along for the ride. As you heard, my name is Jerry Robinson. I am the founder here at followthemoney.com. I've been an investor, a trader. I'm an author of the book Bankruptcy of Our Nation, and I've been coaching people here at Follow the Money on the topic of economics and trading and investing for years. It's wonderful to have you here today. We're going to be talking about, as you can see, episode number 403. I'm excited about this episode. In fact, this is one of the very last episodes, if not the last episode of the year. Unbelievable that 2021 is already over. Here comes 2022. But today's podcast episode number 403, is entitled, very simply, Three Forever Stocks. Three Forever Stocks. We're going to be talking about three stocks that, you know, I personally am holding, you know, buying and holding for the long term, and we would call these forever stocks. You probably heard that before. So I'm going to share with you three stocks that I think over time are going to continue to outperform the overall S&P 500 and that I'm currently invested in myself for the long term. Later on today's broadcast, I want to talk briefly about the Fed's big headache. Boy, the Fed has a problem, right? They've got a lot of problems right now. They're playing with fire. We're going to talk about the Fed's upcoming statement, which is going to be out this week. And if we have time, I want to briefly talk about lithium stocks. We actually did a live coaching call for all of our members, Gold and Platinum members, a couple of weeks ago about the topic of lithium investing. Really interesting topic. If we have time, I'll try to get to that as well. So with all that said, let's head right into our very first segment on three forever stocks that we own for the long term. All right, so before we talk about these three specific stocks that I call forever stocks that I own in my own retirement portfolio for the long term, I want to just briefly talk about our philosophy when it comes to stocks before we do. You know, stocks for many people are the lion's share of the retirement plan. Many people view the stock market as a place to put the majority of their money. In fact, many people, if you look at the average retirement plan today, most people have a house and a 401k. And if you've read Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know that the house is not really an asset, it's a liability. And the 401k that you have at work, or even the traditional IRA that you have, is really like a black box that you put money into, but you don't know what the distribution taxes will be until you reach retirement. Now, many people hope they're going to be lower, but when you ask people about taxes later in their life, they say, well, I expect them to be higher. So, you know, that's the problem with the house and the 401k. The house is not really an asset, it's a liability, as Kiyosaki has very well explained in his books. But then and I agree with it, absolutely. I mean, your primary residence is a liability. It costs money. You're not able to rent it out. If you are renting it out, then it's an asset. But if you're living in it, it's a liability. And on top of that, as I mentioned, the stocks that you put into your 401k, who knows what the distribution tax is going to be when you go to begin taking distributions when you reach retirement. So no one really knows what the tax rate's going to be on that when you reach retirement. Maybe higher. They may have higher distribution taxes. So it's important for us to have a holistic approach to your financial planning and to your overall financial plan. So with all that said, what I'm saying to you is that I like to keep no more than about 20 to 25% of my assets in the stock market. Now, I know the stock market. I've been investing in the stock market now for 25 years. It's hard to believe. But even though I know the stock market very well, I don't want all of my money in the stock market. I want to have money in real estate. I want to have money in commodities. I want to have money in cryptocurrencies. I want to have money in businesses. And I also want to own some stocks. So you have to figure out what's the mix. What's the right mix for you? And that's really only a question you can answer, maybe you and your financial advisor. But for us, it comes out to about 20 to 25%. So somewhere in that range, that's what we are putting into the stock market on a regular basis. 20 to 25% of every investable dollar that we have would go into the market, right? So now when you think about that, you say, well, I'm going to go into the market. What am I going to buy? I'll tell you, to be totally frank with you, I think Warren Buffett is dead on when he says that the majority of people don't know what they're doing in the market. And so they should just literally just buy the S&P 500 index, S&P 500 index ETF, something like SPY, and then just forget about it, right? Just buy SPY over and over. And that's fine. I mean, it's hard to beat the S&P 500, right? It's very difficult. Even when you know what you're doing, most fund managers can't beat the S&P 500 on a regular basis. So if you just want the market return, then you just buy SPY, and you're going to get access to the S&P 500 return every single year. You're going to get market returns every single year. Now, if you want to beat the S&P 500, of course, it's going to take, you know, some thoughts, and especially if you want to beat it regularly. That's very difficult to do. So what I look for in a stock is a company that's going to be around for a long time that I can envision still being here 20, 30, 40 years down the road. This is exactly what I do with my own children, too. My two sons, for example, who are brand new and, you know, they're new investors. They're both, you know, under the age of 10. And, you know, they're learning about investing and they're already investing in, you know, stocks and cryptocurrencies. And it's very exciting for them. And it's neat for them to be able to learn about stewardship and investing. But when we sit down and talk about investing here at our household, what we say is, look, you know, when you're looking at a stock, you want to buy a stock, you have to ask yourself what company A is going to be around for at least, you know, the rest of my lifetime, right? It's going to be here 30, 40 years from now. What company is not only going to be around still, but is going to be bigger, right? Not only is it going to be around, it's going to be bigger. So these are some of the basic questions you ask yourself, and you do your homework and you think to yourself, what do I know? You also want to dip into your education and your experience and say, what do I know? What have I learned over time? And how can I apply that to the stock market? So investing in what you know is also a really important strategy. You can learn that from people like Warren Buffett or even Peter Lynch. He even talked about that. Okay, so with all that said, knowing that we are not going all in on these stocks, but instead these are stocks that are in a well-constructed portfolio that has, you know, some smaller small cap growth stocks, some larger cap stocks. What are three stocks that we just look at in our portfolio and say, these are ones that we just, unless something materially changes, we are just not going to sell, right? In fact, when they sell off, when they go down in price, we want to add more to our position. What are those stocks? Well, let's begin with the very first forever stock. And that would be one that is obvious, I think, to most people. And I think all of these, by the way, are probably obvious. That's what makes a good forever stock, is something that no one really has to tell you. You know that it's doing well. You know that it has dominated in its particular niche. You know that it's making lots of money, and you know that it's going to be around for a long time. And you also believe that the company is going to be bigger. The very first company that we call a forever stock is Apple, ticker symbol AAPL. Not only does Apple have an amazing brand that it's built over the years, in fact, it was founded back in 1976. It took 44 years, by the way, for Apple to reach a $1 trillion market cap. That happened for the very first time, by the way, in 2018. So Apple had been around since 1976. It was not worth $1 trillion until 2018. 2 years later, in August of 2020, the stock hit a $2 trillion market cap. And now, just a little more than a year later, the stock is almost now worth $3 trillion on the market cap. This makes, you know, Apple by far, well, not by far, actually. It's not too terribly far ahead of the number two stock in the world, but this makes Apple the number one stock in the world by market cap. There's just not any publicly traded company that's bigger. And Apple is well positioned as we move forward. So as I mentioned, it's on the verge of reaching $3 trillion in market value. That would be bigger than the entire stock market in Germany, or the entire, or the UK economy for that matter, right? So Apple is enormous, and it's not showing any signs of slowing down in its very big tech domination. Now, since the 1990s, Apple shares have returned around 22,000%. That's annualized about almost 30% per year. If you look at the S&P 500, inversely there, you see about a 7.5% annual increase during that same period. When you look at the stock market itself, you'll notice that Apple is often considered not only a growth stock in the fact that it continues to grow, you know, at an accelerated pace, but it's also become a flight to safety for many people. Some consider it digital gold, so to speak, in the stock market. It thrived during the pandemic. It has a tremendous amount of innovation that it not only has unleashed over the last decade, but has much more coming in the form of a new AR, VR, some sort of augmented reality headset that's coming next year, probably. They're going to be announcing it soon. And on top of that, you also have the talk, we've been hearing about this for years, but an Apple car, like an iCar, right? That is something that's actually going forward. You may remember the old Project Titan, for those of you who've been following Apple for some time. They've been talking about this idea of a car for a long, long time. And when Apple releases products, it really does not only innovate those products and create a product that people want, but they seem to really succeed in improving their products each and every year thereafter. So they create this customer loyalty that is unlike what most brands are able to garner. Then you look at the avid developer community, right? So you have a very huge developer community that Apple is able to kind of use as a sounding board. They're able to test out ideas, which is so powerful. And then you have, of course, the fact that Apple is a shareholder-friendly company, right? Consistently buying back shares, consistently seeing decreasing shares overall. So that's really powerful for investors. And so to me, Apple is just one of these forever stocks that you just know they're going to continue to innovate. They're definitely going to be here, you know, 10, 20, 30 years down the road. And I believe they're going to be bigger. Now, as of this recording, as we do this here in the final month of 2021, we're not saying that Apple is going to go higher tomorrow. We're not saying that everybody should put all their money into Apple. I'm not saying you should do anything. I'm sharing with you instead the three stocks that I consider forever stocks and that I personally own, but that what you should do, I have no idea, right? You need to talk to a trusted financial advisor and you need to make those decisions on your own. Always do your own due diligence and research. But when I look out at the stock market, it's difficult to see a better poised company when it comes to the convergence of AI, artificial intelligence, and the metaverse, and all of these different things. I mean, think about how many people say, well, what about Microsoft or what about Apple or Google, I should say. These are great companies, right? So the second largest company in the world is Microsoft. The third largest is Google or Alphabet, whatever they want to call themselves. But these companies, in many ways, you know, you experience many of these products made by these other companies and Facebook, for example, and many others through the Apple, like the Apple device. So they really make the devices. And in fact, we were just talking about this with our two boys. I was explaining to them the evolution of computing. You know, computing used to be a big honker computer that was very large and it would take up a whole big room just to have. And then slowly time it made it to a desktop. And then people suddenly said, why do I want a computer in my house? And then it was a desktop. And they said, oh, I see why. And the internet. And then we moved to laptops. So no longer a desktop, but a laptop. And then you have a smartphone. Then you can hold it in your hand, no longer on your lap, no longer in your desk, but in your hand. And now we're moving to actually taking that computer or that computing device and actually just putting it on the face, right? So that's slowly where things are moving. And we're going to see soon, you know, AR, VR devices for the head, you know, that you put on and you'll have augmented reality. Well, this is where Apple is going. And when they release these products, I would suspect that they're going to do very well, just as their iPhone did, just as their iPad release did very well. The Apple Watch did extremely well. I would expect the same thing for the AR and VR headset that they have planned, as well as any kind of future iCar or Apple car. And so for me, Apple is a forever stock. AAPL is the ticker, and we own it for the long term and would be buying on any dips along the way. Now, the second forever stock I want to talk about today is a powerful payment processor. In fact, it is the world's largest payment company. And you can probably imagine who it is. It's Visa, right? Visa. Visa, ticker symbol V, is another one of the stocks that we consider a forever stock. When you think about Visa, it is really just difficult to imagine a company that has more pricing power and also has so many toll bridges out there globally. I mean, every time somebody swipes a card, Visa makes money. Every time you buy something with a card, a Visa card, then Visa makes money. And it's just simply incredible. So as the economy grows over time and more people are spending, and, you know, it just over time, Visa just continues to grow and grow and grow. And in fact, last week, Visa said that it wanted to help its clients and partners navigate a new era of money movement. Specifically, they are launching a cryptocurrency advisory service for their clients aimed at financial institutions who are eager to attract or retain customers with cryptocurrency offerings. They're looking to help retailers who are wanting to have non-fungible tokens or NFTs, or they're also targeting central banks who want to explore digital currencies. So Visa already allows buying, selling, and custody of cryptocurrencies on its network, but it also offers a credit card that lets users earn crypto rewards on purchases. Now, in my opinion, Visa's strategy of staying on the cutting edge of the burgeoning digital asset class will serve them very well as they head into the future, as they seek to create a toll bridge between the fiat currency universe and the digital currency universe. So I own Visa as a long-term investment holding in my retirement account, and I like the company for so many reasons. The fact that it is the world's largest payment company, that's a good thing, right? It enjoys multi-decade growth potential. That's a really good thing. It delivers solid annual earnings and revenue growth. This is a very, very important topic that I haven't really brought up to this point. But when you're looking for a forever stock, you want to see revenue growth. You want to see, that's what we call sales growth. You also want to see earnings per share growth, earnings growth, EBITDA growth. You want to see positive EBITDA. But then you also want to see, and this is very important, is you want to see a shareholder-friendly environment. Share structure is so vital. And specifically, you want to see over time that the number of shares outstanding are going down annually, ideally. That's what you would want to see. That shows that, you know, those shares that are outstanding are coming off of the market. The company is either, you know, buying them back or whatever's happening. And this is akin in the world of cryptocurrency. For those of you who invest in cryptos, you know, this is like burning, right? So Ethereum is burning Ether through its new EIP 1559 Ethereum improvement proposal that was put into place with the last upgrade. And so now you have a burning effect going on in Ethereum. Well, that works in the opposite way of diluting value of each one that's out there. It actually boosts the value. So if you're looking for that same kind of thing, so you're looking for a company that quote unquote burns shares, if you will, and they do that by buying them off of the market. Well, Visa has done that, as has Apple as well. You know, when you look at Visa, it has, you know, 50% plus profit margins. So they make, not only do they enjoy rising revenues and rising earnings, but they also enjoy, they keep, you know, a large percentage of each dollar that they do end up, you know, getting through revenue. And if you look at the company itself, it's raised its annual dividend for 13 consecutive years. So it's on track to eventually be a dividend aristocrat, which I firmly believe that it will after it's been paying an increasing dividend for at least 25 years. Visa operates in over 200 countries. It processes transactions in over 160 currencies. Last year, in 2020, Visa processed almost $9 trillion in purchase transactions, right? And they made a cut on every single one of those transactions. They're capable of processing over 65,000 transactions per second, which is just blazing fast. I really like also the fact that Visa has, their management team has wisely avoided lending as a means of generating interest income. They certainly could do that with the cash they have, but that would also leave them in a place where they would have to set aside a large amount of cash as a cushion against loan delinquencies. They don't have that problem. So Visa has a lot of free cash that it's able to use to grow its business without having to tie it up in lending. And then, of course, having to tie up even more money for to cushion for those potential delinquencies. And when you throw in the fact that the company is largely inflation resistant due to its unique business model and pricing power, I believe that Visa will continue to outperform the broader financial markets in the years to come. So I personally like Visa. I like the fact that it actually hasn't had a very good year this year. It's actually down sharply from its $250 peak back earlier this year. So I like shares. In fact, I even added more shares of Visa last week, and I alerted all of our members via our daily email that we put out. So when I add a stock, I'll typically let you know. So if you're not a member today, you know, you're missing out on those emails. Become a member today and get access to know when we're adding a stock or things like that. So Visa is the second forever stock. It's a stock that we own. We would aggressively buy on dips, and we would hold for the long term. And again, we would hold a forever stock until it no longer meets our investment thesis. Our investment thesis for Apple is simple. Innovation is going to continue and someone is going to lead it, right? Apple apparently is the one, and they have tons of cash, so they're well positioned. They have a tremendous team, a tremendous developer team, a tremendous management team. And then they have, you know, voracious customers. Visa, the overall investment thesis is pretty straightforward, right? They're making money off every single transaction that people, when they use a Visa card. And the company keeps a tremendous amount of the profit, leaving them very cash rich. This is the kind of company that I would want to invest in. So Visa, we like as a forever stock, and we will continue to hold it until, for some reason, it no longer continues to meet our investment thesis, or it's no longer meeting the goals and the aims that we had for that investment. So those are the first two forever stocks, Apple and Visa. What's the third one? Well, the third one is an interesting one. It's one I've talked about a lot with members. Members have heard me talk about this company quite a bit. You may have even heard me talk about it here on this broadcast in years past. But that company is Lowe's Companies. So Lowe's is a very interesting stock. It's actually only one. It's only one of 65 stocks that meet the qualifications to be called a dividend aristocrat. Remember, I just talked about dividend aristocrats. So dividend aristocrats are stocks that have been paying and increasing their annual dividend for at least 25 years. And some companies boast an annual dividend. That's great. But relatively few can claim to have increased that dividend every single year for more than two decades. And Lowe's is one of those companies. In fact, they've been raising their dividend for longer than that. They've been raising it for quite some time. So the company was actually founded back in 1946, and the company has been increasing its dividend for much more than 25 years. In fact, it's not only a dividend aristocrat, it actually qualifies as a dividend king. And there's really less than 40 of those. These are companies that have been increasing their annual dividend every single consecutive year for 50 plus years. So Lowe's is a very unique company in that respect. So Lowe's is the second largest home improvement retailer in the world. And you would imagine probably who is number one. It's Home Depot. So Lowe's is the second largest home improvement retailer. And while the company's annual dividend is fairly small at about 1.2, 1.3 roughly right now, it actually represents a fairly small amount of the company's revenue. So what we call the payout ratio, which means that Lowe's could certainly increase its payout ratio or increase its dividend over the years. So it's not like it's been paying its dividend so long and now it's going to run out. It actually has a long runway to continue increasing its dividend. And that's also compensated by the fact that it's enjoyed massive share price appreciation. You know, in fact, the company's average annual total return with dividends reinvested over the last 10 years has exceeded 25%. That means that a $10,000 investment into Lowe's just 10 years ago would now be worth more than, or actually, yeah, right around $100,000 today. Now, there's no guarantee that Lowe's will continue to deliver those types of gains for the next 10 years, but it's likely that the company will continue to execute while operating in a shareholder-friendly environment, right? In a shareholder-friendly manner. The company's management has reduced the total number of outstanding shares by 15% since 2017. And that's applaudable because many companies will actually try to increase the number of shares so as to raise money, and that actually ends up hurting shareholders. So Lowe's has been very shareholder-friendly, just like Apple, just like Visa. Now, some might wonder, why not Home Depot? Home Depot is bigger, right? In fact, when you look at total market cap, Home Depot is larger than Walmart even, right? Home Depot is massive when you think about how big that company is. And that's part of the reason why I like Lowe's, because Lowe's actually has around the same number of stores. It has around 2,200 home improvement and hardware stores around the country and in Canada and other places as well. But when you look at the number of stores Home Depot has, it's around the same. But when you look at the actual revenue from each of the stores, Lowe's has less, which means that there's actually more room to the upside for Lowe's to take market share from Home Depot. Now, there's a few more risks with this stock that could come up. I mean, Lowe's is very similar to Home Depot. And so if there were ever any kind of boycott or some sort of bad thing that happened for Lowe's, that people could easily replace Lowe's with Home Depot. That's the problem here. That's a potential risk. There's a few other risks as well that you would want to dive into. I always recommend looking at the 10-Ks of any particular company. Read that thing well. Just like you would read a white paper of a cryptocurrency, read the 10-K on a stock and make sure that you understand the risk. Make sure you understand what their company is trying to do. And it'll really help you as an investor. So Lowe's, despite some of the potential problems and risks there are ahead, it is a forever stock. We will continue to buy Lowe's. We will continue to buy it whenever it goes down. And we will continue to add it to our long-term investment portfolio. And that rounds out our three forever stocks: Apple, Visa, and Lowe's. Ticker symbol on Lowe's, by the way, is L-O-W. We like it as a long-term income stock. It offers solid sales and earnings growth, excellent management, and a growing dividend. So Apple, Visa, and Lowe's, we own those stocks for the long term, and until something changes our investment thesis and something very material changes, we're not going to sell those positions. We're not going to sell those stocks. All right, stick around for our next segment. We're going to talk a little bit about what the Fed has going on. The Fed, of course, releasing its latest policy decision this week. We're going to talk a little bit about what's been going on with the Fed, what they're facing, a big headache facing them right now. Stick around for that. We'll be right back.
And Follow the Money returns after this.
Hi friends, it's Jerry Robinson here from Follow the Money Radio. Do you want to learn how to trade options? Are you intimidated by options trading but still have a desire to learn how it all works? If so, you will be pleased to know that our options trading course is now on sale in our online store for only $37, but for a very limited time. When you purchase this 5-hour online video course, you will learn how to leverage the power of options to generate a steady stream of income from the markets while minimizing risk. This course, which is deeply discounted for a limited time, provides you with 8 full-length video lessons with me that will walk you step-by-step on how to get started in the world of trading options. This video course begins with a comprehensive introduction to key options trading concepts, including calls and puts, premiums, volatility, along with an introduction to option Greeks and how to properly value an option before you make a trade. But this video course not only introduces you to the basic concepts of options trading, it also provides you with 3 proven option trading strategies, including how to rent out the stocks that you already own to others to generate a passive income by selling covered call options. We'll also teach you a smart way to buy call options for profits, and our students have told us that the secrets revealed in this video alone are worth the price of the entire options trading course. You'll also learn a unique options trading strategy where you can get paid while you wait to buy your favorite stock. This is an advanced trading strategy that is one of our favorites among our top trading students. So this options trading course contains a tremendous amount of knowledge jam-packed into 5 full hours of video presentations that you will want to watch over and over again as you begin or continue your trading journey. If your goal is to learn how to make money with options, this is a must-have education video series. And you can unlock this entire video course right now by simply going to followthemoney.com/shop. There you'll find our online store and simply look for the options trading course. This is a special introductory price and it is a limited time offer, so act now. Go to followthemoney.com/shop and take advantage of our deeply discounted options trading course today. All right, friends, welcome back to the program. Welcome back to segment 2. I want to talk real briefly about the Fed, because the Fed is meeting this week and we're recording this before the Fed speaks. So all we know right now is the fact that the Fed has a major problem, right? I did a earlier call this week for our members entitled "The Fed is Playing with Fire." And I explained some of what I'm going to explain here. Basically, the fact that since the brutal stock market sell-off of early 2020 related to the COVID-19 situation, the Federal Reserve has spent months encouraging businesses and consumers and even the government to borrow their way out of a financial crisis. How? By lowering interest rates and creating very easy money policies, right? This is what the Fed does very well. They encourage borrowing. They want to keep the economy going. And so they really accommodated businesses and consumers and all of this. And when you look at what's happened now, since that time, we see that it worked, right? Government borrowing has accelerated since early 2020, and it remains on a wildly unsustainable trajectory. U.S. federal spending this year stands at a whopping $7 trillion. The United States government spent $7 trillion this year. That has left Americans with a $3 trillion annual deficit. Meanwhile, the U.S. national debt, which includes all of the nation's accumulated annual deficits, stands at $29 trillion. Is the government borrowing money in this environment? Yes, it is, right? Hand over fist. What about corporations? What did the Fed do to help corporations borrow? Did they spur them to borrow? Well, they already had a problem, right? It was already a problem before COVID. Corporate borrowing has been turbocharged, though, in the wake of COVID and the Fed's policies related to COVID, with corporate debt rising by more than $1.3 trillion since the beginning of 2020. Right? Non-financial companies issued $1.7 trillion of bonds in the U.S. last year. That's nearly $600 billion more than the previous high. If you look at total corporate debt today here in the United States, it stands above $11 trillion, which is the equivalent of half of the U.S. economy. Now, this is even as the average credit rating for U.S. companies has been on the decline, according to Moody's. So corporate borrowing has certainly picked up, which it already was a problem, and now it's outrageous. Government borrowing has accelerated. It was already a problem. What about consumer borrowing? Well, as you can imagine, consumer borrowing has also been booming thanks to the Fed's easy money policies. A recent report released by the Fed itself revealed that total U.S. household debt increased by $286 billion in the third quarter of 2021 to now stand at a total of $15.24 trillion. Right? Total household debt in the United States. The total debt balance is now $1.1 trillion higher than it was at the end of 2019, right? The beginning of 2020. So credit card usage among consumers and balances are resuming their pre-pandemic trends, and consumers are more over-leveraged than ever. So it doesn't matter if you look at governments, corporations, or consumers, the Fed wanted them to borrow, right? And they did. Now, the Fed's easy money policies, which were designed to artificially prop up demand, thus insulating investors from any kind of economic reality, distorted an already over-leveraged economy and led to a massive supply constraints, right? The net effect is the highest inflation figures in four decades, as we've been hearing about recently. The CPI, a pretty poor measure of inflation, you know, now standing at a 39-year high, right? You haven't seen these kinds of price accelerations in price since 1982. Got to go back to the Reagan years to find this. And now the debt levels have soared for consumers and businesses and government. The Fed now has the unenviable task of raising borrowing costs sooner than it would really like to in order to battle rising consumer and producer prices. And therein lies the problem, right? Namely, that consumers, corporations, and even the government itself is far too over-leveraged to withstand an aggressive interest rate hike campaign by the Federal Reserve. And so on Wednesday, this week, the Fed will unveil its latest monetary policy plans. Now, we expect the Fed to provide more details about its plan to conclude its massive monthly bond buying program, likely by March, right? Maybe even earlier. We also expect the Fed could also provide some guidance on the number of rate hikes it expects to deliver in 2022. Some banks have said that they expect and hope that the Fed will raise four times in 2022. Others have suspected that it may be three times. If you look at the Fed futures rate market, the FOMC countdown, you'll find that, you know, about three rate hikes are kind of expected by the markets. And the Fed's probably going to talk tough, right, at this week's meeting as it seeks to maintain its credibility. But it's difficult to imagine how it can successfully pull off a string of interest rate hikes without driving the U.S. economy back into contraction mode. So the Fed has been playing with fire since its inception in 1913, and its latest antics are no different. So in essence, what we have here is we have a Fed that has encouraged everyone to borrow by lowering rates, and now it's going to raise rates on all these borrowers, right? Can it do that? Does it have the ability to do that? Can the U.S. economy handle a 2% interest rate? Can it? I mean, if you ask some economists, they say no. I mean, we're running at a 0% interest rate right now. You know, in China, they're running at about 3.8, 3.9% interest rates. You know that if we had those types of interest rates here in the United States, it would destroy our economy. Can you imagine if we was a 4% interest rate right now, going from 0 to 4? What if we just went to where China was, right? It would destroy the economy. So we're completely dependent here in the West upon very cheap borrowing costs. And now the Fed wants to raise them. Well, how high can they go? And lastly, let me just say this. The whole point of raising interest rates is what? So you can lower them again, right? It's the game that the Federal Reserve plays. It's been playing it from the very beginning. It lowers interest rates and creates, you know, all of this moral hazard. And then it raises interest rates and, you know, creates contractions. And then it lowers interest rates to get out of the contraction. And then it goes into acceleration. And then it slows down again and contracts. It's just a wild boom bust economy that we're in, thanks to the Federal Reserve. So whatever they say this week, and they could shock the markets. I want to include that because it's possible they may say something that no one expects. It's highly unlikely, as the Fed typically tries to telegraph its decisions well in advance so as not to create that situation. But sometimes you have to do that. Think back like Paul Volcker, whenever he shocked the markets when they were suffering from inflation back in the early 80s, and he raised, you know, interest rates by, you know, a lot. And that really shocked the markets. But that was really the only way to slow down the raging inflation. Well, we'll see what the Fed is going to do this time. All eyes on the Fed this week. All right, stick around. After this break, we'll come back with our final moments and concluding thoughts. Hold tight.
Hey friends, this is Jerry Robinson from Follow the Money Weekly. Recently, we have been receiving many emails from our listeners commenting on the great help they're getting from our precious metals expert, Tom Cloud. Gold and silver are excellent hedges against the growing threat of coming U.S. inflation. Who's your gold guy? Make it Tom Cloud. With over 30 years' experience with precious metals, Tom will answer all of your questions. Don't buy your gold and silver through some call center and pay inflated prices. Call my good friend Tom Cloud and speak directly with him and get all of your questions answered. For a limited time, Tom is offering free shipping and insurance on every gold and silver purchase made by our listeners. Call 800-247-2812. And when you do, tell him that Jerry Robinson from Follow the Money Weekly sent you. And he'll throw in that free shipping and insurance on your entire order. Call your gold guy, Tom Cloud, right now for the very best deals on gold and silver coins. 800-247-2812. That is 800-247-2812.
Are you prepared for the next stock market crash? It's not too late to protect yourself and your family with Jerry Robinson's best-selling book, Bankruptcy of Our Nation. Now in a new audiobook format. Whether you want to listen in the car, at the gym, or on your iPad, we've got you covered. Get the entire 300-page book in audio format for only $24.95. That's over 12 hours of Jerry Robinson's economic wisdom, financial insights, and practical money-making strategies for only $24.95. Inside this new audiobook, you'll learn 21 profitable income streams you can create both now and in retirement, along with unique tips on how to inflation-proof your investment portfolio using our own PACE philosophy, and our 5 levels of financial freedom, which is Jerry Robinson's personal blueprint for building true wealth. If your goal is to become a better investor, increase your income, or just understand what is really happening in the global economy, you cannot afford to miss out on the vital information that is jam-packed into this 12-hour audiobook. Get instant access to Bankruptcy of Our Nation in audio format right now by going online to www.ftmdaily.com/bankruptcy. That's ftmdaily.com/bankruptcy. Download your copy today and get on the fast track to true wealth and a lifetime of financial security.
I picked up a new book this week by Ray Dalio, the largest hedge fund manager in the world. Ray Dalio wrote a brand new book entitled Principles for Dealing with the Changing World Order, Why Nations Succeed and Fail. It's a really interesting book. I've only made it just a few pages in. But Dalio did a really good job on this book. It's very thick. And he goes through and he talks about how economic history has kind of played out over the last 500 years, going back to the Dutch Empire, the British Empire, kind of examining the rise and fall of these empires, and of course the United States Empire, and the rise and fall of it, and talks about China as well, about that, you know, being that emerging power. Well, there was a headline that came out earlier, I guess it was a week or so ago, where hedge fund founder Ray Dalio predicts there's a 30% chance of a U.S. civil war in the next 10 years because of emotional political polarization. Right? Things are really getting out of hand here in the United States when it comes to politics. People are just, it's become the new religion. Quite frankly, you know, there was a time when people used to fight over religion. Today, they kind of give that up. That mainly happens now in the ivory towers. But when it comes to politics, that's really the common man's fight. And so right versus left is kind of the new religion. And now, guys like Ray Dalio are looking at it and saying, well, we probably are going to have a civil war here in the United States. Well, I don't think he's wrong. We've talked about the riots. We've talked about the ongoing problems here in the United States, and, you know, just crazy. So interesting stuff. I do recommend Dalio's book, although I haven't made it too far into it. I'll come back with a progress report once I finish. It's a pretty thick book, and I've got a big stack of books I'm trying to get through, so it may take me a bit to get through it. But whenever I have more to say on it, I will. But I would encourage it. It's actually a really thick book, and all the charts are in color, and so I expect it to be very expensive. It was only like 20 or 25 bucks on Amazon, so I think it's worth a read. A lot of great information in a book there by Ray Dalio. Also, I mentioned, and we're running out of time, I just want to mention this very briefly before we conclude, is I had done a big webinar and coaching call webinar for all of our Gold and Platinum members on the topic of lithium investing. So lithium has been one of the very best markets that we have been tracking over the last, several months. For example, we issued an uptrend alert on the lithium ETF, the GlobalX lithium ETF, LIT. We issued a new uptrend on it to all of our members by email on May 22nd, 2020. So we said, hey, lithium is forming a new major uptrend. The price at the time was $26.86. We put it into our model portfolio. As of today, lithium is still in that uptrend, and it has risen 217% total. So it's done very, very, very well. The only one that's done better than lithium in our PACE model portfolio is rare earths. The rare earth metals ETF, REMX. We issued a new uptrend on it a week later on May 29th of 2020. And that VanEck rare earth and strategic metals ETF, REMX, rose from $33.59 to today, it's about $110. So it's up about 230% since that time. So rare earths and lithium have been hot. Lithium is enjoying some of the fastest rise in price, lithium prices, in years. Here is a report from Wall Street Journal. An index of lithium prices from research firm and price provider Benchmark Mineral Intelligence doubled from May to November, and is up some 240% for the year. So just the price of lithium itself is up 240%. It's at its highest level in data going back for 5 years. Driving the run-up are bets on continued scarcity. So there's plenty of lithium in the world, but converting it into battery-grade chemicals is a long and expensive ordeal, according to this report, and that is very true. That's the problem. There's plenty of lithium. You're never going to really run out of lithium, but it's very cost-intensive and labor-intensive and even resource intensive in some ways to actually get lithium converted into the type of chemical that works with batteries, right? And then you also have environmentalists who are pushing back at lithium too. Lithium, it's funny because lithium is actually helping the economy, kind of decarbonize. And yet you still have people who are, against lithium mining as well. But there's no active futures market for lithium like there is for oil or copper or something like that. So lithium is an unusual commodity in that respect, but it does have a tremendous role to play in the 21st century economy that we are building. So China is pretty much the world leader when it comes to lithium chemical processing and battery production. And that's been a problem for the U.S. as well as rare earths, right? That's another problem. So anyway, we talked about our favorite lithium stocks in our latest report. So if you are wanting to become a member today, you can get access to our latest Investing in Lithium Stocks 101. We think there's a long runway ahead for lithium, although over the next decade, especially, we talked about in our report, We laid out some of the favorite stocks that we like for the long term, and we rank them according to our Smart Score ranking system. So lots of information there. Lithium, really an interesting market, an interesting niche if you're looking for a niche to trade or invest in. And if you're a member here at Follow the Money, just log into our website and check out our latest coaching calls. We do one every week. It's a live call. You're able to jump on and join us, you know, live, ask questions and all of this. It's great. We cover different topics in investing and trading and cryptocurrencies and commodities and economy and Federal Reserve and so many different topics. So it's very, very helpful. Helps you keep you in the know, become a better investor, become a better trader, and all of that. So if you want to check that out, if you're already a member, go to our website, followthemoney.com. And if you go to the coaching page, followthemoney.com/coaching, you'll find the entire archive of coaching calls we've done over the years, hundreds of videos, hundreds of hours, if not thousands of hours of education for you waiting behind the paywall. And we encourage you to become a member if you're not already one. Go to our website, followthemoney.com/join, and there you can see our plans and pricing. Learn more about each of our plans and find the one that's right for you. Become a member, join our global investing community, and get our alerts, get our ideas, our insights every single day, right here from followthemoney.com. All right, friends. Well, we're out of time now. That brings us to the end of today's broadcast. Thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of your life each and every time we do this podcast. And as always, I'd like to leave you with a final word. And this time it comes from Edgar Fiedler, who was a U.S. economist, who said, "He who lives by the crystal ball soon learns to eat ground glass." And that's just something to think about. Remember, friends, when you want the truth about the global economy, just follow the money. And if we don't talk again before Christmas and New Year's, then a very Merry Christmas to you and your family, and Happy New Year to you. God bless, and we'll see you next time.
The information contained on the Follow the Money podcast is strictly for informational and educational purposes. It should not be construed as specific investment advice. The views and opinions of our guests and sponsors, including Tom Cloud, are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of FTMDaily.com or Robinson Media Group, LLC. Jerry Robinson does hold an insurance license and at times may offer consulting on life insurance and fixed retirement income products. Follow-up, individualized responses to email or phone requests that involve the rendering of personalized investment advice for compensation will not be made absent compliance with state investment advisor registration requirements or an applicable exemption or exclusion and applicable insurance regulations. Past performance is not indicative of future results. You should be aware of the real risk of loss in following any strategy or investment decision discussed on the podcast. Remember, never do your financial planning through podcast or radio. It's your money. Be wise, do your due diligence, and always consult a trusted financial professional before making any financial decisions.